This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. First off this week, it's This Is Your FBI in the Phantom Mine, their story from October 1st, 1948. After that, it's KC Crime Photographer and Key Witness, his story from February 12th, 1948.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. In the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States, nearly 4 million members are banded together to build better futures for themselves and their families. Their reasons for becoming Equitable Society policyholders are many, but certainly among the most unselfish and far-sighted Equitable Society members are those parents who have seen the wisdom of an Equitable Education Fund. Fathers and mothers, in just 14 minutes, the Equitable Society will tell you how to make sure that your children get the funds necessary for the education you want them to have through an Equitable Education Fund. Tonight's FBI file, The Phantom Mine.
Many of us know the type of person who would be willing to pay more for an article in the black market than he would be willing to pay for the same article if he were able to buy it legitimately across the counter. That type of person is always looking for an angle, for a connection through whom he may be able for a little while longer to put off the ignominy of going to work. There is nothing such a person detests more than the idea and the practice of a day's wage for a day's work. Those people are known as operators, and even when they continue for years to be small operators, they never lose hope that one day, through some miracle, they will become Mr. Big Shot. In their eyes, a big shot is anyone who does not have to work for a living, but who makes his money through lying, cheating, or killing. There are those who have pictured this swindler as a criminal in kid gloves, who wanted only money, and who abhorred the type of criminal operation in which lives are lost. Such a picture is a sentimental caricature, because the truth is that to the criminal, whatever his type of crime may be, no one's life is important except his own. Tonight's file opens aboard an old freighter which is tied up to a dock along the waterfront of a large eastern city. It is early afternoon. A bright sun is shining, but below decks on this rusting tramp, dampness and gloom prevail. Sheltered by this atmosphere, a man moves silently, stealthily along a grimy corridor. Then, looking furtively about, he enters the engine room and moves swiftly to one of the engines. He stands examining it intently, unmindful of the quiet approach of footsteps.
What are you doing?
Huh?
I asked you what you were doing.
Well, I was...
Who are you?
One of the wipers.
And the engineer of the ship. I never seen you.
I just signed on, sir.
What's your name?
Louis Jackson, sir.
What were you trying to do to that engine?
Oh, nothing, sir. Look, may I go now, sir?
What's that in your hand?
That's just a brush, sir.
Let me see it.
What for?
I smell kerosene. I think it comes from that brush. Now, let me see it.
No.
And there is kerosene on it.
So what if there is?
Come on. I'm taking you to the captain.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Captain.
Good afternoon, Mr. Metcalf.
Captain, I hate to trouble you, but I've got to report this man.
Aren't you just signed on?
Yes, sir.
Now, what's your report, Mr. Metcalf?
Well, I was down in the engine room a while ago. This man came sneaking in. Didn't see me. He went over to one of the engines. Started to fool with him when I called out to him.
Yes?
He refused to tell me why he was there. Then I discovered he had a brush in his hand. The brush was soaked with kerosene.
I see.
I haven't looked at my engines yet, Captain. I don't know whether they're damaged or not.
Well, let me know as soon as you inspect them.
Yes, sir.
Do you wish to press charges against him?
Well, that's up to you, sir.
Well, I'll question him. You go examine the engines. Leave the man here with me.
Yes, sir.
And thanks for being that alert, Mr. Metcalf.
You're welcome, sir.
Well?
Well, what?
Well, that was pretty stupid, don't you think?
From letting him nail me, you mean?
Yes. From now on, Louis, keep away from that engine room till we get to sea.
Meanwhile, at the local FBI field office, Special Agent Jim Taylor is approaching the desk of Agent Tom Allen.
Hello, Tom.
Oh, hello, Jim. I thought you were in court today testifying in that Dexter case.
There wasn't any need for me to testify. Dexter changed his plea to guilty.
Oh, glad that file's closed.
Yeah, so am I. But it looks as if we've got one to work on now that's going to be just as tough.
New one?
That's right. Just came in as I got back from court. The SAC assigned it to us.
Well, what's the story?
Seems a man named Rafael Fernando went to the United States Consul in Barcelona, Spain. He confessed that he'd been an accomplice in a fraudulent bankruptcy.
In Barcelona?
No, in Chicago. Well, the consul took Fernando's story and sent it back to the State Department in Washington. They, in turn, sent it over to the Bureau.
Well, how does it get to this office?
Well, it was sent to the Chicago field office first, and they conducted an investigation on it.
Well, how long ago did this bankruptcy take place?
14 months ago.
In Chicago?
That's right.
It's probably given everybody connected with it a pretty good chance to scatter.
That's what the Chicago investigation showed. You see, the bankruptcy originally took place when Fernando, a partner in the firm, allegedly absconded with $250,000 and then fled to Spain.
Have you read the Fernando confession?
Yes, it's here in the file. I just finished reading it.
Does Fernando explain why he waited 14 months before he finally decided to confess?
Yes. His partner in bankruptcy was a man named William Gilbert. Fernando says that all he ever got out of it was transportation back to his home in Barcelona.
I see.
He says that Gilbert promised to send him $50,000, but that he never sent him anything at all.
So this man Gilbert took all the money while Fernando took the blame.
That's it.
That still doesn't explain how we happen to wind up with the case in this office.
Oh, the Chicago office started to search for Gilbert. They learned that he'd changed his name and was headed for here.
They didn't find out whether he intended to set himself up in business here, did they, Jim?
No. According to everything they could find out, he was headed here to buy a Liberty ship.
Well.
Chicago also said that Gilbert had not only changed his name, but that he was very adept at changing his appearance.
This makes the Dexter case look like high school stuff.
It's not going to be easy, I'll give you that. Well, let's go to work and see what we can find.
Hello, Captain.
Oh, hello, Mr. Grant.
How does everything look?
Your ship is in tip-top shape, Mr. Grant.
You ready to sail tomorrow night?
Yes, sir.
When do you expect to do the job?
Oh, and we're a few miles offshore.
You've made all preparations.
Louis put a charge of powder under one of the floorboards in the engine room. It'll blow a hole in the side of this ship big enough to walk through.
Splendid.
And just to make sure, after we sail, I'll have him paint the floor down there with kerosene.
And you've got your story straight?
Sure. After she thinks, they say we ran into a floating mine. That'll stand up.
And take every precaution, Captain. Those insurance companies investigate every angle in a case like this.
What do you collect from them, Mr. Grant?
$175,000.
And the boat stood you $120,000?
That's right.
Sounds like we're going to make a good night's pay.
Tom, you want to walk with me down to the teletype room?
Are you expecting something, Jim?
Mm-hmm. Come on. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks.
The SAC spoke to the Chicago office a little while ago. They said they'd have something for us on the Gilbert bankruptcy.
They say what it was?
No, they didn't. They did say they'd located Gilbert's ex-girlfriend, though. She was coming into the office there to answer some questions for them.
I hope she can give us more of a lead than we've been able to get so far. I checked every hotel in town today. Nobody answering the description Chicago gave us on Gilbert has checked in recently.
Now, he's been in town. I found out that much.
How?
Well, you know that list of officers I got from the U.S. Maritime Commission?
Oh, you mean that list that came in yesterday afternoon?
That's the one. Well, I called the men who have been conducting the sales. I found that they remembered a man of that description bidding on Liberty ships here 6 weeks ago.
Well, did he buy one?
No, he didn't.
That's too bad. That would have been an easy way to trace him.
Then 3 days after he left here, he tried to buy one in Boston, but he didn't have enough money to get one there either.
They've got those sales someplace about every week, haven't they, Jim?
Just about. Go ahead. I checked every one of them. He attended every sale there was up to about 2 weeks ago.
Did he buy a ship at that one?
No. Now, all of a sudden, he stopped showing up.
I wonder why.
Well, maybe he found a ship someplace.
Why do you suppose he's so anxious to get a ship?
I don't know, Chuck.
Nothing in his background that would indicate he was interested in smuggling.
No?
Well, there's your message now, Chuck.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Tom, this might be the break we're waiting for.
What is it?
Gilbert's ex-girl says that he's living here now, under the name of Harry Grant.
Good evening, Captain.
Now, hello, Mr. Metcalf.
I know I shouldn't bother you this late, Captain, but this couldn't wait.
Yes, what is it?
Well, you remember the episode with the wiper yesterday.
Yes.
I have something further to report.
On him?
Yes. I just couldn't help this, Captain. I've harbored a suspicion against him ever since I caught him in the engine room.
So?
I kept thinking about it all day today. And a couple of minutes ago, I went to his locker.
You did what?
I went to his locker and I opened it.
Well?
I found some black powder and some fuses.
Explosives?
That's right, Jim.
What in the world
would... In my opinion, Captain, it can indicate only one thing. He aims to sabotage the ship.
Yes. It certainly appears that way, doesn't it? Have you any idea where the man is now?
No, sir, I haven't. But we can certainly...
Captain, everything...
Oh, excuse me, sir.
Well, Captain, will you question him or shall I?
Look, I've got to see you alone, sir.
We have something important to discuss with you, Jackson.
I'll handle him, Mr. Metcalf. You go back to your quarters.
But you need the evidence against him, Captain. I took it from his locker. I have it right here.
Captain, you better get rid of this guy.
Oh, see here. You better talk respectfully.
Please go, Mr. Metcalf.
But I can't leave without...
You heard what he said. Get out.
Hey, what is this?
Metcalf, I've asked you to go to your quarters.
Captain, are you taking his son...
Do as I say.
Are you in favor of his...
Oh, Louis, why did you do that?
Because that charge is going off any second.
And he's been through your locker. He found some powder and fuses. Now he'll know I'm mixed up in this, too.
That can mean we lose.
There it is.
What happens now?
When the report comes in, I'll alert all members of the crew to stand by to abandon ship.
Now, what happens with Metcalf?
Well, we leave him here. He liked the ship so much, we'll let him go down with it.
We will return in just a moment to tonight's case from the files of your FBI. Already, the bells of our colleges have called nearly 2.5 million eager young Americans back to their books and classrooms to be given one of the greatest advantages of all, a college education.
There's a boy in our block who'd give anything to answer that bell. Brightest kid you ever met. All his life he's planned on college, then law school. But it's all washed up now. His dad's last illness wiped out the family savings. Now that boy's had to go to work to help support his two younger brothers.
It's a shame his father never heard of an equitable education fund.
What's that?
An equitable education fund is a plan offered by the Equitable Life Assurance Society to make certain that your children get the funds necessary for the education you want them to have, regardless of what happens to you. Now, here are three things about the plan you should consider. First, you start when your children are young and spread their educational costs over 10 or 15 years instead of taking a licking in four. Second, when your boy or girl is ready for education, the money is ready and waiting for him, right there in the Equitable Education Fund. Third, this equitable plan works whether you live or die. If you are totally or permanently disabled, the fund continues to build up without any further payments. If you die, the education fund becomes fully established immediately.
That's exactly the plan I've been looking for, Mr. Keating. I think I'll see my Equitable Society representative first thing tomorrow.
That's the thing to do. See an Equitable Society representative as soon as possible. Or send a postcard care of this station to the Equitable Life Assurance Society. Remember, from the moment you set up an Equitable Education Fund, you make sure that when the college bells ring for your boy or girl, they will be ready to answer the call. And now back to the FBI file, The Phantom Mine.
The crime being committed in tonight's case from the files of your FBI is a serious one, but it is only one of the more than 5,000 major crimes committed every day in the United States. Your FBI cooperates in bringing this series of official radio programs to you because it wants to acquaint you with the ways of the criminal so that you, as an individual, will be better able to cope with every particular type of lawbreaker. Your FBI does this because it has a responsibility to you, a responsibility which involves fighting America's army of criminals to the best of its ability. But you, the individual citizen, also have a responsibility. It is up to you, if you wish to see the crime wave conquered, to see to it that you have a strong local police force, and that that local police force is adequately paid. Money saved by cutting police protection or by not allowing local policemen to earn a living wage is not, in the long run, money saved. For where protection is inadequate, crime increases. In one major city in the United States, a city of well over 1 million population, a survey determined that more than 50% of the local police were so poorly paid that they were in constant debt. A companion survey showed that crime this year in that city has risen more than 50%. Your local policeman's life is at stake when he puts on his uniform. It is your duty to see to it that while he risks that life, he is paid a living wage. Tonight's file continues in a waterfront house that is occupied by Mr. Grant, owner of the scuttled ship. He is just greeting a visitor.
Welcome home, Captain. It's good to see you.
Well, have you got a drink? I need one.
Sure. Here.
Now, take it straight, thanks.
Very well. And I'll join you.
Let's drink to the SS Marion Green. The best ship I ever skipped.
And the best one I ever owned. Well, where's Louis? Didn't he come with you?
I'll be here. He was in the other boat. They're probably still asking them the same questions they asked me.
Who asked you any questions?
The Coast Guard. They picked us up.
After the ship went down?
Sure. We rode for about an hour before they sighted us.
Well, what kind of questions did they ask you?
Where was I at the time of the explosion, whether I saw anything, stuff like that.
Anybody in the crew suspicious that it wasn't an accident?
Yes. Metcalf, chief engineer.
What did he find out?
That Louis had explosives.
Oh, how did you deal with him?
Louis knocked him out. We left him in the cabin after the ship went under.
Oh. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Grant.
Oh, that's right.
Well, this is Louis, Mr. Grant. Did the captain come in yet?
Yes, he just got here a couple of minutes ago. Where are you?
I'm still downtown. The Coast Guard just let us go.
Were they suspicious?
No, but they will be.
What do you mean?
Did the captain tell you about the engineer, Metcalf?
Yes.
Well, he's still alive.
I thought he went down with the ship.
So did I, but when we were rowing away, we heard somebody yelling for help. It was Metcalf, so we picked him up.
Well, what did you do that for?
Well, what could I do? There was 14 other guys in the boat.
What did Metcalf say when he saw you?
Didn't have a chance to say anything. As soon as we pulled him into the boat, he passed out.
Where is he now?
At emergency hospital.
Hmm. Listen to me, Louis, and get this straight.
Yes, Mr. Grant, what is it?
Get into that hospital and get to Metcalf.
Jim, this is a tough one. I thought you had the right answer when you got that list of new registrations on all boats.
If Grant bought a boat in the last 2 months, it must be one of the boats on this list.
I agree with you there, Jim, but we've checked almost every one of those names.
All but three. And they're all owned by corporations. Now, this first one, the SS Dorothy Drew, is owned by a corporation in Santa Monica, California. Now, the Los Angeles office is checking on that one for us.
With a two-hour difference in time, we might not get an answer until tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, but there's nothing we can do about that, John. The second ship, the SS Marion Green, is owned by the Black and White Corporation.
Can't check on them until tomorrow morning either.
Oh, I did get some details on the SS Marion Green, though.
What were they?
Well, she's a 4,000-ton freighter, equipped as a lumber carrier. She can carry about 2.5 million feet of lumber.
Well, did you find out what the Black and White Corporation paid for her?
Yes, they paid $105,000. The last owner said that the Black and White Corporation would have to spend about $15,000 in repairs to make her seaworthy again.
That's a pretty good buy. There aren't many 4,000 tonners around you can pick up for $120,000.
I know. Now, the ABC Handren Corporation owns the third ship. That's the SS Edith Summers. There doesn't seem to be any way of finding out anything about them until tomorrow either.
Maybe we ought to call it a night, Jim. Get a fresh start in the morning.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. I don't suppose there's much else. Hi. Special Agent Taylor speaking.
Hey, hello, Mr. Taylor. This is Dr. Elliott over at the emergency hospital.
Yes, Doctor. Anything I can do for you?
Well, I called police headquarters to report this, and they told me to call the FBI. I've just treated a man named Joe Metcalf for shock. He came to for a little while and explained that he was in a shipwreck, but that the wreck was no accident.
Now, let me get the facts on this straight, Dr. Elliott. This Mr. Metcalf claims that there was a deliberate scuttling in the ship that he was on. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Did he tell you the name of the ship?
Why, yes, he did. It was the SS Marion Green.
Thank you for calling, Dr. Elliott. I'll be right over to talk to Mr. Metcalf.
What time is it, Captain?
A little after 4.
We called over an hour ago. Why haven't we heard from him?
I don't know. I can't wait around much more. I've got things to do, Mr. Grant. Things to take care of. Now, I suppose you pay me off and I'll be getting along.
Pay you? For what?
The job I did.
Captain, I'd like to point out to you that there's a man named Metcalf who, by your own admission, may jam up this whole deal.
So?
If the deal's jammed up, I don't collect from the insurance company. And if I don't collect, Captain, neither do you.
Now, just a minute. I made a deal with you to sink a ship. So right now, that ship's at the bottom of the ocean.
That was only part of the deal. The most important phase of it was making it appear to be an accident. That you didn't deliver.
Look, can I help it if Louis messed things up?
It was your responsibility.
You hired him, Mr. Grant.
Captain, that has nothing to do with... Who is it?
Me, Louis.
Oh.
Hello, Mr. Grant.
Hello, Captain. Where do you want me to put your chief engineer?
What's the matter, Jim? You look beat.
I'm getting a little tired of these wild goose chases.
What happened this time?
Well, I got over to the hospital. My doctor took me up to talk to Metcalf.
Well, don't tell me he changed his story.
Worse than that, Tom, he was gone.
Well, how could that happen?
Glenn came in and took him out. He told the nurse he was a shipmate of Metcalf's.
Did the doctor tell you what Metcalf said while he was conscious?
Yes. He said he was the engineer aboard the SS Marion Green. You know, it's probably the boat that Grant bought.
Did Metcalf's story explain why he bought it?
Yes, from what Metcalf told the doctor, the SS Marion Green was purposely scuttled. And I think we'll find that that ship was very heavily insured.
Metcalf's the only one, then, who could prevent Grant from collecting on that insurance.
That's it.
So the shipmate who came to the hospital and got Metcalf out must be one of Grant's men.
I would think so. You know, I hate to think of the treatment they'll give him.
Checked every possible record, Jim. Every boarding house, every hotel, every rental listed at the real estate board. There isn't a single Harry Grant on any of those lists.
Oh, Metcalf gave this waterproof pouch to Dr. Elliott before he passed out again. Said there were some papers in it that he got out of a drawer in the captain's cabin just before he jumped off the ship.
For Metcalf's sake, I hope there's something in here that'll tell us where Grant is. Hey, you take half and I'll take half.
I'll take these.
Doesn't seem to be anything here, Jim, except some paid bills.
I think I've got something, Tom. Listen to this. It's a note to the captain saying I'll come aboard about 10 o'clock to discuss final plans with you. And it's signed with the initials HG.
Standing for Harry Grant.
I should think so. There's no return address on the envelope.
It's very common stationery, too, Jim. There wouldn't be any chance of tracing the purchaser of this stuff.
No. That's right. I think we might find out where Mr. Grant sent this from, though. Let's get a classified telephone directory.
I think he's coming, too.
You better stop hitting him, Louie.
Why, you afraid I'll hurt him?
No, we want to talk to him.
Metcalf. Metcalf, can you hear me?
Yes. I can hear you.
Good. Good. Then answer a few questions. Do you remember being at the hospital?
Uh-huh.
Did you talk to anybody at the hospital?
Uh-huh.
What did you say to them?
I told them all about you and the wiper and blowing up the ship.
How do we handle this, Mr. Grant?
There's a way. Metcalf is the only one who actually saw Louis in the engine room, isn't he?
That's right.
Now, what's that got to do with it?
Then he's the only one that can prove anything.
You forget about the doctor at the hospital. You blab as sure as you're born.
What, do you think my lawyer will say to him on the stand?
I don't know.
He'll say, Doctor, isn't it possible that a man of Mr. Metcalf's age might get hysterical and delirious after an accident like that? The doctor will have to say yes, and that will be all there is to it.
I see.
That means that if Metcalf is dead and can't be found, the insurance company has to pay.
Well, I don't carry a gun.
Louis does, don't you, Louis?
Well, I lost mine when the ship went down.
You'll find one in that top drawer. Get it and take care of him.
Okay. Is it loaded?
Try it and find out.
You're not trying anything.
What?
What is this?
Hold it. Special agents of the FBI.
Well, Metcalf's still alive, Jim.
Good, Tom.
What are you two doing here?
We came here to serve warrants for arrest on the three of you.
What are the charges?
Conspiracy to defraud.
See here, that's a serious charge to make without any proof.
I think we've got enough proof on that charge. And when we get back to headquarters, we'll add another charge against all of you. Attempted murder.
Harry Grant, Captain Spencer, and Louis Jackson were all tried in a federal court and convicted on both charges. They are now serving long terms in the federal penitentiary. Tonight's case from the files of your FBI was solved because Special Agent Jim Taylor noticed that there was no stamp on the envelope containing the note found among the captain's papers. He therefore reasoned that it had been delivered by some messenger. A check of the messenger services listed in the classified telephone directory revealed that one of those services had been summoned by Mr. Grant to deliver the note to Captain Spencer aboard the SS Marion Green. A further check of the delivery slip showed that the note had been sent from number 415 Ocean Avenue, and it was at that address that Special Agents Taylor and Allen located the three criminals. What was even more important than the capture of the criminal triumvirate was the fact that your FBI was able to save the life of an innocent person. And thus, once more, your FBI, by the speed of its investigative procedure, succeeded in performing its double function of protecting not only your property, but your lives.
In just a moment, we will tell you about next week's exciting case from the files of your FBI. Now, Joe, I understand there's one thing you'd like to clear up about an equitable education fund.
Yes, Mr. Keating. Are these funds flexible? Can they be increased later if I can afford it?
They certainly can. Many young fathers start with an equitable education fund that would pay part of a boy or girl's way through college. Then, as the family income goes up, the amount of the education fund is increased. Your equitable representative will be glad to show you just how it's done. Look him up soon. Or write care of this station to the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States.
Next week, we will dramatize another case from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. An authentic record of the operations of one of the cunningest of the criminal breed, the Confidence Man. Its subject, fraud. Its title, The Atomic Swindle.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Jerry Lewis. The director, Sid Goodman. Your narrator was William Woodson, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Atomic Swindle on This Is Your FBI.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
The Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation brings you Crime Photographer.
know? The Valentines are coming in already. And here's one addressed to man's best friend.
Well, that must be for you, Ethelbert.
And here's one addressed to a great snooper.
And that must be for you, Casey. And here's one addressed to the most famous announcer, the man you can always count on.
I wonder who that could be.
Oh, I get it. They mean you can always count on me to say, Anchor Hawking, the most famous name in glass. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tony Marvin. Every week at this time, the Anchor Hawking Glass Corporation of Lancaster, Ohio, and its more than 10,000 employees bring you another adventure of Casey, crime photographer, ace cameraman who covers the crime news of a great city. Our adventure for tonight, Key Witness. Night, and a most unpleasant night. Dark, windy, damply cold. Snow is falling, the kind of snow that turns to wet gray slush as it strikes the ground, and then in spots turns to a treacherous film of ice. On an almost deserted highway, far out on the city's fringes, a car moves cautiously over the slippery pavement. In the car...
Oh, had to be our luck to draw an out-of-town assignment on a day like this, Casey.
Day part of it wasn't so bad as just coming back at night. I'm not familiar enough with this road, and I can't see
it. Casey, there's a big electric sign just ahead. I think it's on a roadhouse. If it is, let's pull up and have a cup of coffee.
Oh, we certainly will. A warmer upper is something both of us need.
I can make out the sign now. Five Spot Cafe.
That's for us.
Five Spot Cafe. Seems I've heard of the place.
Yeah, the name's kind of familiar to me, too, but I can't remember. I guess we drive in here, huh?
Yeah. There's a big parking spot.
Yeah. Good spot for our bus right here. About as near as we can get to the main door, I guess. Well, I'll come around and help you out, Annie.
Oh, don't bother. I can make it. You have cameras inside. Don't forget to lock up.
Yeah, I will.
Casey, doesn't some racketeer run a place like the Five Spot?
Hey, wait a minute. That's right, kid. You got it. This is Shark Yardley's headquarters. I've known the rat for years. Never been out to this joint, though. Well, I've never heard of him selling poison food, so I guess this place is as good as any other on a night like this. All right, we're all locked up. Come on.
Uh-oh, electric signs just went out.
Oh, nuts. It's the only light we had out here, too.
I can't see 10 feet in front of me.
Now, wait a minute. I got a pencil flashlight in my inside pocket. Stand back in the car, Annie, out of the wind while I dig it out.
Yeah.
Careful with him, Pete. I'm not being careful. Which is our car? I can't
see.
Yeah,
I know where it is. Let's get a minute and get going.
All right.
Someone else is having a little trouble in the dark, Casey.
More than we're having. You see that drunk those two guys had between them?
They passed close enough for that. He could hardly stand. They were practically dragging him along.
Mm. Well, he wanted to take the pledge tomorrow. Where's that darn flashlight anyway? I found it here.
Car's pulling out. Guess they got the drunk inside, okay.
Yeah. Oh, nuts. Now it doesn't work.
The flashlight?
Yeah, the battery must be dead.
Oh, we don't need it now. Signs come on again.
That's a break. All right, come on, let's get into that cafe.
Yeah, I hope there's plenty of heat in there and chill through.
Hey, wait a second.
What?
Kicked something in this slush here.
Huh?
I heard it.
Hotel key. At least it has a hotel tag attached to it.
Yeah, wait, let me wipe some of this muck off it. Harwell Hotel, room 1118.
Maybe one of those men dropped it who were taking the drunk home.
Well, if the drunk dropped it, they're going to have some extra trouble taking him home unless they know his hotel and room number. He'll never be able to tell them. Well, I'll stick the key in my pocket and turn it over to somebody inside the joint here. Maybe inquiries for it. Let me help you on these steps, Annie. They're pretty slippery.
Yeah, thanks.
Boy, it's going to get inside. The dining room's pretty crowded, Annie. Let's look in the bar. No customers in there. We'll get quicker service. We'll get the bartender to bring us coffee and sandwiches.
Okay.
Good evening.
Well, it's really a very lousy evening, bartender.
Yeah, surely tell me. You just drove up here?
Yeah, give me a menu, will you?
Okay. Here.
Casey, where'd you get that blood on your hand?
Huh? Blood?
Yeah, look.
Yeah, I see. Cut yourself, mister?
Well, not that I know of. Annie. This hotel key I found. I thought it was simply wet with slush and snow.
But look at it under these bright lights.
The tag is streaked with blood.
Hey, you... You found that key, mister?
Yeah, to room 1118, Harwell Hotel.
Well, give me it. Somebody might come and ask you for it.
I didn't say I found it anywhere near here, did I?
No, you didn't. Excuse me a minute, will you?
Casey, how did fresh blood get on that key?
I don't know, Annie. I don't know why that bartender showed such an interest in it, either. I do know this joint belongs to Shark Yardley, who's made quite a few guys bleed plenty.
The bartender just went into that back room.
Yeah. Annie, I got a hunch we better get out of this place.
So have I.
Okay, come on.
Uh-oh. Call the door of the back room, just
hold. Yardley, one of his rod men.
Well, if it isn't my old friend, Casey.
Hello, Shark.
Well, I never hoped to see you in this little joint of mine. It's so off the beaten track.
We newspaper guys get around, you know?
So I've heard. But I want you and the lady to have a drink with me. In my private office.
Oh, thanks, Shark, but we're in a hurry.
But I must insist you step into my private office. I want to talk privately to you. About a key.
I think I see the outline of a gun in your pocket.
Shall we go to my office?
All right, come on, Annie.
Thank you. And be very quiet. There are guests in my dining room I wouldn't want to disturb. Yes, come right in. Now, sit down, lady. This chair is the most comfortable.
It looks comfortable.
Before I ask my friend Casey to sit down, frisk him, Nick.
Okay, boy.
I don't carry a gat, Shark. Guns aren't part of my racket.
Oh, I believe that, Casey. But I'd like to be sure.
He's clean, boss. Here's the key that was in his pocket.
Where did you get this key, Casey?
You undoubtedly know that I picked it up in your parking lot. You mind telling me why it's so important to you?
You've no idea.
No? I'm just a dumbbell.
Because I don't believe you're a dumbbell, I'm keeping you here for a while. I'm leaving Nick here to watch you while I join my guests in the dining room.
How long are you going to keep us here?
We'll discuss that when I come back, lady. Now I must return to the cafe. Now, you see, I have reason to wish that my guests see a lot of me this evening. Make Casey and the lady comfortable, Nick.
I'll take care of them, boss.
Now, excuse me, won't you?
Looks as though we've walked into something, Casey.
Don't say we have, Annie, and without our galoshes on.
Yeah, and you ain't walking out of it, neither.
Shark told you to make us comfortable, Nick. That's not the way to do it.
Oh, thanks for reminding me. Sit down and take a load off your feet.
No, I'd rather stand.
Sit down, I'll blast you.
Since you put it so nicely, I will. What made the electric sign on this joint go out a while ago, Nick?
Oh, did the sign go out?
Yeah, just long enough for two guys who were propping up a third guy to get him into a car and drive away.
You saw them guys, huh?
Well, I think your boss figures we did. Third guy wasn't just drunk, was he?
Casey, that
sure, Annie, you... yes. Was the third guy dying, Nick, or already dead?
I ain't here to answer questions. Maybe the boss will before you leave us.
I wish you wouldn't talk like that.
Can't take it, huh?
Well, it isn't easy to take, you know. The Shark said he'd stand us a drink when he brought us in here. I see a bottle on his desk there. 100 proof, too. Do you mind?
Keep your mitts off that bottle.
Said, look, the least you can do is let a guy have a drink. I need it, fella.
To buck you up, wise guy. To brace you for what's coming.
Well, put it that way if you want to. Look, can I have a shot, huh?
Okay.
Thanks.
Babe, wait a minute.
Huh?
What? Tilt that bottle slow and easy into one of them glasses. You try to lift the bottle or throw it, I'll plug you before it leaves your hand.
I won't take any chances like that with you, Nick. This suits you all right?
So far. Now put the bottle down.
Yeah, just as you say.
You poured a stiff one for yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, I need it.
Well, ain't you offering the lady none?
I don't want anything to drink.
I don't want anything to drink.
You threw that whiskey in his eyes, Casey.
That's right. 100 proof stuff, too. All right, I'm not getting cold, Annie.
I got his gun.
Give it to me. Here. Tap him gently on the head with it so you'll stay out till we make our getaway. That'll do it.
We can't go out this door through the bar.
Come on, there's a window here. Only a short drop to the ground. Come on, you first.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, all right. Come on.
Right with you. Now let's get to our car in the nearest police station.
Did you have to throw a half tumbler of that good whiskey in the the guy's eyes, Casey?
Well, it was worth it, Ethelbert.
I'll say.
Well, what happened after you made your escape from that joint last night?
20 minutes later, we were back at the Five Spot Cafe with a carload of cops.
Yeah, but Shark Yardley and his gorillas were gone, of course.
How you figure blood got on that key you found?
The body of Chuck Trumbull was found in a vacant lot way over on the south side this morning.
Chuck Trumbull? He's the character who's been trying to bust in on Shark Yardley's racket.
Shark paid him off last night.
Trumbull was stabbed to death with his own knife. The police found it sticking in his body.
And Trumbull lived in room 1118 of the Harwell Hotel.
Well, then that key you found...
When Yardley learned that we had the key with the blood on it, he knew it would put him on the spot for Trumbull's murder.
And as he'd planned the murder, there was to be no evidence that Trumbull had been anywhere near the Five Spot Cafe. In fact, Shark Yardley's alibi would be that he was at the Five Spot when Trumbull was killed someplace else.
Yeah, but that key to Trumbull's hotel room found in Shark's parking lot was proof he'd been there.
Yeah, that's it. And when Yardley's brought to trial, Casey's testimony and mine about that key will send him to the chair.
The cops ain't caught up with the shark yet?
No, but they will.
Until they do, I'd be pretty worried if I was you.
Worried?
The shark's a bad baby, Casey. This Trumbull ain't the first guy he suspected of bumping off.
No, cops think he got Ed Clive last year.
And with Clive's own gun. Like you think he carved Trumbull with Trumbull's own knife. And there was that gambler a couple years ago, I forget his name.
Ernie Hastings.
Yeah, and the cops could never prove nothing. What I mean is, Shark Yardley ain't gonna like having a couple of witnesses loose that can finally fry him as he deserves to be fried if they stay loose.
I'm not worried about the shark. He'll be too busy dodging cops to bother Ann. Me.
Besides, we've been witnesses against his kind of rats before.
Well, he's a special mean kind of rat, Miss Williams. A special dangerous kind.
Look, Annie, it's after midnight. It's time I took you home.
Yeah, I'm ready to go home. I'm tired.
Well, here's what we had, pal.
Gee, you're paying for a change.
Well, I always pay. Don't I? Well, eventually. Don't I?
Yeah.
Good night.
Night, Casey. Night, Miss Williams.
Good night, Ethelbert. Casey, Ethelbert may be right. Doc Yardley might try to put us out of the way.
Oh, he and his mob have got to keep themselves undercover, Annie. Yeah, but look, tomorrow morning, I'm going to ask headquarters to put a guard on you for a while.
How about you?
Oh, I can take care of myself.
Well, so can I.
Oh, wait a minute. Women are different.
Really? I wasn't sure you were aware of that.
Huh? What do you mean?
Nothing.
Annie, are you getting one of your humors again?
A woman's privilege to have humors. Oh. I don't like to discuss nothing but the latest crimes and the newspaper business with you all the time and sit around and be the same as Ethelbert and Captain Logan.
Oh, you couldn't be the same as Ethelbert and Captain Logan.
Not quite, because my hair is longer and I wear skirts.
Well, okay. So your hair's longer and you wear skirts.
And that's that.
And that's got to be that. I'm not going to lose a pal.
Meaning me.
Meaning you.
I'm beginning to hate that word, pal.
What's the matter with it? I like it. I like what it stands for, too. Come on, the car's across the street. Let's cross over right here.
Okay.
Now, look, getting back to Shark Yardley. I'm sure there'll be no danger from him for a while, Annie, if ever. Heat's on him heavy, and he's got the lie.
Casey, that car!
Hey, stop, Annie!
I only missed it by hair. If you hadn't pulled me out of the way, I would...
The driver swerved way across the center line as though he were trying to run us down. Then he kept right on going.
Yeah, well, I think he did try to run us down, Casey.
Huh?
Yeah, I got to look at that driver. And I'm sure he was Shark Yardley.
This is the season of buffet suppers and other informal entertaining. Now, when it's necessary to serve an unusually large number of guests, jadeite is the ideal answer. Yes, jadeite, spelled J-A-D-E-I-T-E, jadeite, the new kind of dinnerware developed by Anchor Hawking. You'll love its delicate jade-green color, its fine porcelain-like texture, and you'll be amazed to find that jadeite is as strong and heat-proof as the Fire King oven glass you use for baking. Yet, with all its advantages, jadeite is incredibly low in price. For example, a jadeite cup and saucer costs only 15 cents in open stock, and a complete 35-piece dinner service for six
including cups, saucers, dessert dishes, salad plates, dinner plates, vegetable bowl, platter, and sugar and creamer set, is priced at less than $5. Ask for jadeite at chain stores, department stores, hardware stores, and other stores selling chinaware and glass. Jadeite is the newest triumph of Anchor Hocking. The most famous name in glass.
Don't argue with me, Casey. Both you and Miss Williams get police bodyguards from now on.
Well, after what happened half an hour ago, Captain Logan, I'm delighted.
Well, I'm not, and I won't stand for it. How could I have one of your cops at my elbow 24 hours a day, Logan? I'd feel like a sap.
You'd rather feel like a dead sap who don't feel anything at all?
Listen, the driver of that car may not have been Shark Yardley.
Oh, yes, Casey.
I think he was the driver, and I don't think this will be his last attempt to get you. You two are the key witnesses against him, and while he's on the loose, you're on the spot.
Well, okay, all right, you...
And aside from bodyguards, I'm giving each of you a gun to carry.
No, give one of them to Ann. I'm not looking to gad around.
Hey, Casey, please.
No. I don't like this thing. Carry him and I won't shoot him.
All right, bullhead.
Now, look, since I must have bodyguards, give me guys who won't be hard to take, Logan, will you? I mean, preferably bad pinochle players.
I'll put Bradley in charge of your guard detail. Does he suit you?
Yeah, Brad's okay. But will he get worn out following me on assignments? Come on, hurry up, Brad. City desk says there's a rest job. We left my car down the street here.
Oh, where are we going now, Casey?
City Hall. An appointment assignment to take pictures of the mayor's newly appointed park commissioner.
Say, you get all the dirty work? Who takes all the pictures of those pin-up gals I see in the papers?
Oh, very old press photographers. Well, you've been my shadow for 5 days now, Brad. How do you like it?
I'll be glad to get back to the straight detective business.
Yeah, say, look, you know, Logan's making saps out of both of us. Shark Yardley hasn't tried anything, and he won't try anything.
They tried to make a hit-and-run morgue case out of you.
Yeah. I think Miss Williams only imagined that Shark was in that car. And nothing's happened since. Logan's just wasting your time and the city's money, Brad, and that's a fact. Well, here's the old bus. Get in, get going.
Okay. Casey.
Huh?
Don't step on that starter.
Huh?
Don't touch the starter. We left this car half an hour ago. Its hood was covered with snow.
Yeah?
Most of the snow's fallen off. Maybe because somebody raised the hood. I'm going to see.
Well, why would anybody raise the hood?
Somebody did. And put this underneath.
What is it, Brad?
Look. Attached to your starter. I think it's a little TNT.
Bomb, huh?
Uh-huh. The old gangster gag. When you started your car, Bluey.
Bluey, yeah. Oh, thanks, Brad. Guess maybe Logan was right. Okay, Logan. All right. I've been the sap and you've been the wise guy.
You finally think so.
Well, don't rub it in now, pal.
Why not? Even after Bradley found that bomb in your car 2 weeks ago, you gave me an argument. Since then, a .45 slug's gone through your head and a knife's been thrown at you.
I know.
But still, you argue.
All right.
Even with all the luck of the Irish you've got, you should be dead by now.
Well, my luck can't last forever. Plenty jittery right now.
Since this morning, after you learned Miss Williams had received a box of candy through the mails, it turned out to be poison.
Look, if she'd been sap enough to eat one of those candies, Logan...
Fortunately, she wasn't. You'd probably have swallowed a couple.
We gotta stop this, you know. We gotta nail this guy, Yardley.
How, exactly? You know we've turned this town inside out trying to find him.
We've got to make him come to us.
That's a beautiful idea. Just what method will you take?
Wait a minute. I think I've figured a method.
Yeah?
What? The Shark's got a big fat grudge against me, Logan. He's a guy who always settled his grudges in person when he could. Well, I want him to have an opportunity to get into my apartment at night unmolested.
What do you mean?
I want the guard who watches my fire escape to apparently sneak away from his post every night and do a little guzzling at a bar around the corner. I'd like him to make a special habit of doing it between 2 and 3 a.m.
So Shark will be tipped off and pay you a call by way of the fire escape?
Right.
Now then what?
I'm going to take that gun you offered me.
You see, I doubt if you'd shoot a guy, even to save your own life.
I'll kill Shark Yardley if I have to, but he ought to save me that trouble. You know, crooks and killers usually follow a set pattern. They stick to old habits.
I don't get you.
Well, I'll explain it later, but right now, you tell my fire escape guard to play hooky between 2 and 3 a.m., and do I get a gun?
I'm always a sap for you, pal. All right, I'll instruct the guard, and I'll give you my best gun, a 38 positive and a 45.
No, I don't want a revolver. I want a rifle.
Rifle?
Yeah. A big calibered rifle with a silencer attached.
Silencer?
Yeah. And Logan, look, we'll have to let Bradley and the rest of my shadows in on this, of course, but don't let it go any further, especially don't tell Ann Williams about my plan.
I'm not to tell Miss Wiggins. Suppose you tell me about your plan, and now.
Well, okay, Brad, here's the old homestead again. Time to go through our usual routine.
Yeah, well, I don't like the routine that's become usual during the last week, Casey. You're taking a big chance with nobody watching that fire escape between 2 and 3 in the morning?
I'm watching.
But you're not used to handling guns.
Well, I can handle a rifle Logan gave me. Also, I've had lots of experience handling crooks.
All I can do is hope you'll be okay. Shark may show up any time now, Casey. Maybe tonight.
The sooner the better. Williams is losing a lot of sleep.
She's got nothing to worry about. She hasn't a fire escape.
Well, come on, Brad. Get out of this car. Come up to my apartment as usual. Look the joint over as usual. Then come back here down to the street as usual.
Then you'll turn out your lights as usual.
Yeah. And I'll seem to be sleeping soundly between 2 and 3 a.m.
What if you do fall asleep, Casey?
Well, in that case, I won't. Mind that flashlight.
Only me, Casey.
Shark.
Don't speak with that gun beside your bed.
Yes, I won't.
Don't. Turn that table lamp on so I can see you and that gun a little better.
Okay.
Thanks. Well, you look like just the same sap who butts into things he should keep away from. Well, that gun of yours. Nice high-powered rifle that can make a big hole in a guy. Why the silencer on it?
Well, it had the attachment when I got it from the cops.
Wasn't that nice? The revolver I brought along has a silencer, too. I always like to use the other fellow's weapon if he has one. If I'm unlucky and fall into a pinch, a good lawyer may convince a jury that the other fellow was a suicide.
You're going to shoot me with my rifle?
Yes, Casey. After I've made sure it's loaded. It is. Now...
Don't, Shark!
Yellow, aren't you? Afraid to take it?
Put down that gun!
I'm putting the muzzle against your head. The cops will be sure this was a suicide.
It will be if you squeeze that trigger. You're suicide.
What do you mean?
You look to see if it was loaded.
It is.
You didn't look to see if the barrel is clear. It isn't. It's been plugged. So the shell in the chamber will blow up the gun.
Yeah, this is a bluff. You can't get away with it.
It isn't a bluff, nuts.
Take what I came to give you.
Snap the trap yourself, Shark. I can't say I'm really sorry.
We'll join the crowd at the Blue Note in just a moment. The baby of today, your baby, has many advantages which most of us didn't enjoy when we were very young. And not the least of these are scientifically prepared baby foods. These baby foods make it easy to provide a nourishing, well-balanced diet. They save the young mother countless hours in the kitchen. But to take full advantage of the convenience of prepared baby food, be sure to insist on glass jars. For with a glass jar, you can heat and serve baby food and reseal it to store leftovers all in the original container, saving endless extra hours of work each week. And then, too, there's the matter of cleanliness. Glass jars are completely sterile. They protect baby food perfectly both before and after opening. Most of the better brands of prepared baby foods are packed in anchor glass jars and sealed under vacuum with easy-to-open, easy-to-reseal Anchor caps. Both products of Anchor Hocking. The most famous name in glass.
The explosion of that rifle didn't kill the shark, huh, Casey?
No, Ethelbert, miraculously enough. The docs will have him patched up for his trial on a Trumbull murder charge, and he'll be able to walk to the hot seat afterwards.
But how could you be sure he'd try to shoot you with that rifle instead of his own gun, Casey?
Look, now, he killed Trumbull with Trumbull's own knife, huh?
Uh-huh.
And Clive with Clive's own pistol.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was Shark's murder pattern, didn't you say?
That's right.
Oh, I'm awful glad it's over, Casey.
So am I, Annie. I'm sure glad to get rid of that bodyguard.
You know, I'll miss mine.
Huh? Miss having a cop at your elbow every minute?
Well, my principal guard was nice. I liked him.
Yeah?
Nice looking, too. You met him.
Yeah, I met him, sure.
Of course, I won't miss him too much.
Huh?
We have a date together this evening.
Oh. Have a date, huh? With a cop tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but look, dear. Annie, you and I usually go out together every evening.
Oh, but you and I are just pals, Casey.
Huh?
I said, we're just pals.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, I must be running along to meet him now. So long, Ethelbert.
Hey, so long, Miss Williams.
Good night, pal.
Good night. What are you laughing about?
Pal.
Nuts.
Crime Photographer, starring Stotz Cotsworth as Casey, is written by Alonzo Dean Cole. It is brought to you each Thursday by the Anchor Hocking Glass Corporation, makers of Fire King Oven Glass. Anchor glass containers, anchor caps and closures. All products of Anchor Hocking, the most famous name in glass. Photographer is directed by John Dietz and is based on the fictional character of Flash Gun Casey, created by George Harmon Cox. Original music is by Archie Blyer, and the program features Miss Jan Miner as Anne and John Gibson as Ethelbert. Herman Chittison is the Blue Note pianist. If you're a young man from 17 to 31 years of age, the Navy is interested in you, and you'll be interested in the Navy. Well, the Navy offers you training in the most extensive scientific schools in the world, combined with travel and adventure, good pay, financial security, and early retirement. Get in touch with your local Navy recruiting office immediately. This is Tony Marvin saying goodnight for the Anchor Hocking Glass Corporation of Lancaster, Ohio, with offices in all principal cities of the United States and Canada. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the show for this week. If you want to find more from This Is Your FBI, Casey Crime Photographer, past episodes of this show, or anything else Relic Radio, just visit the website, relicradio.com. You'll also find a link there to our Shoutcast stream and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, that's how you can do it. Thank you, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.